Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Gigi Sohn, who's the co-founder and president of Public Knowledge, a Washington, D.C.-based public interest group working to defend citizens' rights in the emerging digital culture. She has served as a project specialist in the Ford Foundation's Media, Arts, and Culture Unit and as executive director of the Media Access Project, a public interest law firm that represents citizens' rights before the FCC and the courts. In May 2006, the Electronic Frontier Foundation gave Gigi Sohn the Internet Pioneer Award, and she is a member of the advisory board of the Future of Music Coalition and the Center for Public Integrity's Well Connected Telecommunications Project. Welcome to Background Briefing, Gigi Sohn.
Great to be here, Ian.
And it's pretty extraordinary to think that the government can snoop on the private emails of the head of the CIA, the nation's top spy. What does it say about how the rest of us are vulnerable?
Well, I think what it says is that all of us are vulnerable. It doesn't matter what position of power we might have. And also it shows how little even the smartest people in our country, leaders of our country, know about what happens online. I think there's a real need for people to get digitally literate. In other words, they need to know not only how to use online tools, but also how other people use them, how corporations use them, how government uses them. And it is astounding to me the lack of knowledge that folks have about, you know, what one's vulnerabilities and, frankly, what one's rights are in the online space.
Well, my understanding, though, in terms of policing the online space, and in particular the FBI, that they do have a cyber crimes unit. But for a citizen, a regular person, to get the FBI's attention, that's a pretty high bar. And what's extraordinary in the case of General Petraeus and the housewives gone wild down in Tampa, Florida, is how this became a case in the first place. I've spoken to people who have been harassed in the most hideous ways online, and they simply can't get anybody to deal with it, and yet they jumped at this one. So what's going on with the FBI?
Well, I think the more salient question is what's going on with the law. So we have a law that is now 26 years old. It's called the Electronic Communications Privacy Act, and that sort of sets the baseline as to where government can snoop on citizens. The problem is that in 26 years, the technology has changed enormously. I mean, we didn't have a commercial internet in 1986. We didn't have the kind of cloud services where you put your data on a bunch of web servers in 1986. So technology has far surpassed the law, and what has happened is both government and corporations have taken advantage of that fact to engage in the kind of data collection and snooping that really concerns citizens.
So, in other words, we simply don't know how much we are exposing ourselves every time we go online or make a tweet or send a text. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly right. I mean, I think most people don't have the slightest idea of what they're exposing themselves to for a matter of data collection or government snooping when they get online, when they use Gmail. These are not secure tools. And somebody as smart and as high-powered as David Petraeus didn't know it either. So I think that's number one. And the second thing is, I think people do expect that the laws would protect this kind of activity against it happening, and unfortunately that's not the case either. So it's not only a matter of folks not being literate in the digital world, it's also a matter of our laws being grossly outdated and needing to be updated as soon as possible.
Again, I'm speaking with Gigi Sohn, who's the co-founder and president of Public Knowledge, a Washington, D.C.-based public interest group working to defend citizens' rights in the emerging digital culture. So in terms of the FBI's cybercrimes unit and this case that exposed this affair between David Petraeus and his biographer, came about under the statute of cyber harassment, apparently. And my understanding is that the FBI's main focus in terms of its cyber crimes unit is on, you know, hackers penetrating government computers and pedophiles. So in terms of citizen victims of internet harassment, what laws are there to protect them?
Not very many. You know, and I think this is a case, and it's not the only case, of government prosecutors basically going beyond the bounds of the law. There's no cyber harassment law that I know of, or one that specifically, you know, gets to the kind of activity we're talking about here. But, you know, I think prosecutors have basically take what laws are on the books and sort of expand their jurisdiction to meet their needs. I think we're seeing this in the copyright area as well, where prosecutors have taken a provision from a 2008 law that said that government concedes the tools that are used for copyright infringement, and they've gone and they've used it to seize websites. So when there's really no law that speaks directly to the issue at hand, then, you know, prosecutors use their discretion, as they're often allowed, to stretch the bounds of those laws.
But in terms of isn't there a fundamental difference, though, between the internet and, say, conventional publishing like newspapers and broadcast media in terms of libel, for example? I mean, my understanding is that internet service providers are immune, as unlike newspaper publishers, and the onus is on the person who might be conducting the libelous activity rather than the person who publishes it. Am I correct?
Well, it depends. It depends on the area. So if I can get back to copyright again, if somebody posts an infringing document or infringing movie, the intermediary, usually either the website person, you know, whoever has got the website up there, the website owner, or the internet service provider like an AT&T or Verizon, they must first take that offending material down. And if they don't, so they have responsibilities, okay? The responsibility doesn't automatically pass through to the offending person, the person who committed the infringement or posted the infringing material. So it's not always the case that the intermediary gets a free pass. When it comes to libel and defamation, yes, that is the case. There's something called the CDA Section 230, or the Communications Decency Act, Section 230, that says basically in all cases, again, except for copyright and trademark, if the intermediary is just being a pass-through, if they have no editorial discretion over what's being said or what's being posted, they get a free pass. And that's a fantastic law. I wish it applied to copyright as well. It does not. But as a general rule, that is the case, but there are exceptions here and there.
Well, Gigi Sohn, in terms of the Petraeus case, which allegedly began with a cyber harassment complaint by this woman down in Tampa, Florida, against David Petraeus' biographer, and that, of course, led. They had a way that they were communicating in sending drafts, right, to each other on a common Gmail, I think. But, for example, I know somebody whose career has been destroyed by cyber harassment from some person who's obviously a little unhinged and who's just been saying the most terrible things about this person and constantly posting these outrageous claims about this person online. And eventually this person contacted the attacker. And what the attacker more or less said was, if you pay me, I'll stop, which is, by any definition,
blackmail.
Extortion.
Yeah.
But still, my understanding is that this person can't get into court.
Yeah, well, look, we have a First Amendment in this country, and we have to balance, you know, we have to balance freedom of speech against speech we don't like. And, you know, sometimes the losers in that balance are people who are very, very sympathetic. Look, the libel and defamation laws, they still apply in the online world. Again, the intermediary is not responsible, but the, you know, the person who commits that libel or defamation, if it meets the legal definition of libel and defamation, it can be, you know, called into court and punished for that. But you're absolutely correct. We don't have laws that cover every instance of bad behavior online, and that's because we have a First Amendment that we have to balance the equities there. And yes, that's horrible. That is what has happened to your friend. But I think sometimes that's the price we pay to be in a free society. I question what a narrowly crafted cyber harassment law would look like. It probably would encompass a lot of speech that we would want to be free, and it would be abused by prosecutors when things, you know, aren't as harassing. I think it would be very, very difficult to craft a law that doesn't have very bad unintended consequences for free speech in this country. And that's, like I said, sometimes our First Amendment rights have to be balanced against, you know, the rights of victims, and sometimes the victims win, and sometimes the First Amendment wins, and, you know, it's not a perfect balance.
So, Gigi Sohn, then what is the responsibility of, say, Google? In this case that I'm referring to, if you type in this person who's being harassed, if you type their name in, it immediately the harassing documentation comes up because this person continually posts and therefore gets at the top of the queue. And Google are not in any way saying that they're responsible for what's going on and they won't do anything about it. Now, there was a case, I believe, where Google was sued in Australia recently and they lost. So give us an update on where things stand and what is the responsibility of a, say, a Google in this matter?
Well, again, it's hard to say. I mean, again, to the extent that Google is not the, you know, is not the editor there, they don't really have responsibility. Although I will say there are, you know, other situations now, at the risk of beating a dead horse, in the copyright space, they are now saying that if a site is alleged to be infringing, it will come up lower in the search standings. Okay, so it won't come up at the top. It'll come up closer to the bottom. It'll be tagged, you know, with a tag that says, you know, this has been alleged to be infringing. So in some areas, you know, they've been willing, or at least they felt pressured. I don't think Google wants to do it, but they feel pressured that in the copyright space that they have to sort of do this, you know, lowering the search of these allegedly infringing websites. And I know they do block abusive websites as well. They certainly block pornographic websites when that's brought to their attention. So they have the capability of doing it. I think the problem for them is if they do it too much, then do they lose their immunity as a simple search engine? At that point, do they have to edit everything? And when they start to become an editor, all of a sudden, there's a lot of responsibilities and liability that comes with being an editor. So I think they have a difficult, you know, I'm not defending what they've done here and what they've done in the other places, but I'm just saying, you know, to the extent that it starts to pick and choose what websites get blocked and what websites don't, particularly if there isn't a law against it, all right? So we have laws against pornography. We have, you know, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act that places responsibilities on intermediaries when it comes to copyrighted material. We don't have similar laws when it comes to harassment. So if all of a sudden you're going to go beyond the law and start to, you know, pick and choose what is, you know, what's an appropriate link and what isn't, then all of a sudden you put yourself in the position where you can be found liable because you have this editorial control over your search engine. So it's a very delicate balance, and I can't really fault Google for wanting to err on the side of not blocking as opposed to blocking.
Well, just in closing, Gigi Sohn, Google did lose this case in Australia. I believe it involved somebody who'd been publicly accused of murder, and they sued and won. But the point is that apparently Google was quite vigorous and obviously spent some serious money in defending itself. So what kind of line are they holding here?
Look, Australia does not have a First Amendment, and that's what I keep coming back to.
Sure.
All right? We operate under different rules in this country than in pretty much any other country in the world. I mean, Google has problems with, you know, the fact that it's not blocking certain links and it's not blocking certain videos on YouTube all over the world. I mean, they have enough counsel all over the world because every single jurisdiction is different. So that's why it's different in Australia, and these companies have to make a decision, you know, where it's a more repressive regime, and Australia obviously is not the height of repressiveness, but talk about Thailand, where you can't post YouTube videos making fun of the king or something like that. They have to make difficult decisions. Do I operate there and give the people there some taste of freedom, or do I say, look, I cannot abide by, you know, the different rules that you've got here, some of which are censorious, and I'm going to leave. It's difficult. It's a profit-making enterprise. I'm sure they want to be in as many countries as possible. They did close up shop, at least for a while, in China because they couldn't abide by those rules. But I think looking at what happened in Australia is really not apropos of what happens here in the United States, because we have a constitution and we have the right to freedom of expression. I think 999,000 times out of, you know, out of a million, that's better for citizenry than it is for corporations. Or for some harasser. But I think, you know, every once in a while, it kind of goes on the other side of the ledger, and, you know, ordinary innocent people are the lesser for it.
Well, I think your point's well taken, Gigi, because American revolutionaries, the reason they felt so strongly about the First Amendment was that the British libel laws shut down all opportunities of dialogue and debate before the revolution. In effect, the very same laws that Tom Paine and Tom Jefferson and et cetera were railing against are in place to this day in both England and Australia. So there's no question that the First Amendment is one of the great gifts to human freedom.
Yep.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us, Gigi.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Again, I've been speaking with Gigi Sohn, as the co-founder and president of Public Knowledge, a Washington, D.C.-based public interest group working to defend citizens' rights in the emerging digital culture. She has served as a project specialist in the Ford Foundation's Media Arts and Culture Unit and as executive director of the Media Access Project, a public interest law firm that represents citizens' rights before the FCC and the courts. In May 2006, the Electronic Frontier Foundation gave Gigi Sohn its Internet Pioneer Award, and she is a member of the advisory board of the Future of Music Coalition and the Center for Public Integrity's Well Connected Telecommunications Project. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And the conversation continues at facebook.com/ianmastersmedia. And I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Time.